Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm John White.
Hey, John, we're right coming off the native plant sale last week.
Yes, good sale. Weird weather.
That's for sure. Definitely on Saturday, I think we had, four different kinds of weather in the span of a few hours.
Most of it cold or cool, at least.
Right, exactly. And Sunday was nice and sunny, but it was still cold, especially in that early morning hours. But we hope that our listeners were able to visit us down at the plant sale and ask lots of questions and scoop up some plants for their garden.
Right. That's kind of the purpose. Also helps to raise some money for the garden, but it's also to introduce people to some plant material they might not necessarily be exposed to.
Right, exactly. And I know for a fact that that color, those colorful pots are always the first to fly off the shelves and stuff. And I think people kind of get excited. They want to, scoop up their plants and take them home. And then you realize, okay, now I got to get these in the ground.
Right.
What's next? So we're going to provide you all with a few tips today to kind of keep your garden looking successful, especially with planting new additions to your garden. And I think because at your native plant sale, you also have a lot of plants that are considered low to moderate water usage. But I think it's a little different once you get a new planting going, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you buy a plant at a nursery or plant sale or wherever, plant more than likely has been in a greenhouse or some kind of protected, type of situation. So when you're bringing it home, you're exposing it to your location, which may be good or bad. Maybe a horrible hot, location, or it could be a, one that has nice fertile soil, and so you never know when the plants head out the door. You don't know where they're going. So a lot of times when you first get it planted, you want to make sure that you dig the hole only to the depth of the root ball of the plant that you're buying, whether it's a 4-inch pot or a 1-gallon or a 15-gallon. And then you loosen the ground or widen the hole 2 to 3 times the width of the pot. So you're loosening this up so that roots will grow out away from the plant into the new soil. And I don't recommend putting a lot of organic matter, when you plant. If you're planting a whole bed, then yeah, you can go ahead and work the whole bed up, but don't do it by individual hole.
I kind of use the backfill soil that I pull out initially to be able to kind of mix that into that very rich organic soil that they're potted up in from the nursery, because it's a nice, real dark colored soil, potting mix, all of that into there with the native soil, because then that way you don't kind of pamper the plant too much. Right. You want to kind of have it acclimated to our area. So you're talking not so deep, but definitely wide.
Right. Okay. And at least loosen the soil up as you're going wider.
Okay.
Because that just helps the roots, grow into that native soil better. So it makes it for a better situation. And then, of course, water right away.
Water it. Don't let it sit there.
Stick the plant in the ground, don't water. The dry soil will suck the water out of the root ball, and then your plant suffers from lack of water.
Right.
So make sure you get watered in real good. Water it, let it soak in, water it again, let it soak in, and then it should have been soaked good enough after that.
And when you're talking about plants, when you're transplanting them, what, in your opinion, would be an acceptable level of transplanting shock? I mean, I don't expect plants when I put them into the ground are going to look exactly the way they did in the nursery or at the plant sale. But, you want to kind of know exactly, how to gauge that.
If you move pretty quick, where you have your hole kind of pre-dug and you get your plant out of the pot, kind of tease the roots, tease some of the soil off the roots, and then put the plant in the ground and, start water in, backfill, and get it filled up and get it soaked real good. Usually you cut your transplant reaction shock down quite a bit. So just moving quickly and doing it and then getting water on it right away is real important. If you don't get the water on right away, then you do start to catch that little bit of wilt where the plant starts to wilt and it looks like it's not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll get some water and then it kind of perks back up.
Right. Okay, good. I think that's really good to note as well.
And then if you let it go too far, then it goes into real shock, and then it's a 50-50 chance as to whether it's going to come back or not.
So act fast. So don't let them sit there in your patio for too long after you've purchased them.
Get the holes dug and get them planted.
ASAP, right?
Yeah, right.
So what about our existing plants that we have in the garden? If you have a plant that really likes an area, and you have maybe a succulents or even some agaves, yuccas, things of that nature, if they like that area and they kind of start filling that up, you start seeing some pups or little babies kind of sprouting out from the edge. And is this a good time to start dividing those up?
Yeah, the agaves and stuff will put out little pups, especially if the agave's gone to flower. Mm. So when it sends up that flower stalk, a lot of times it'll send out pups, and the pups you can let grow for a bit. You know, if they're in an area where you don't mind them, then you just let them go, and they'll develop into agave plants. If you don't want them in a certain area, then you can go in, dig down, find them, and sever them. Allow the cut area to dry for several days, and then you can go ahead and replant them.
And that callus, the callusing, or the drying of that point is to prevent rot. Is that
right?
Correct.
Right. Yeah. There's several plants that you can propagate from pieces, and you want to make sure that those cut ends always heal dry first.
Okay.
And it may take 2 or 3 days to do it, so don't put the plant out in the sun and let it dry, because it will cook the top part of the plant. So you want to, you know, sever it, put it in the shade, and let it, you know, stay for a couple days, 2 or 3 days. And then when that area that was cut is now calloused over, has a little bit of, you know, tissue growing over it, then it'll be fine.
It's good to go. Excellent. Excellent. Several years ago, I purchased some tiny tangerines, bulbine, from the native plant sale. And I have a little area, a little walkway. And those really like the heat. They're really, they have the succulent leaves and then the tall flower spikes and real dainty tangerine, surprisingly enough, colored flowers on them. But they tend to kind of get a little too tight in an area as well. And I've really found that just by getting two of those plants has fully filled up a huge walkway if I just did that division.
Right.
And I filled up the area spots on there. And then it also encourages the plant to continue flowering and not be confined to a space. So it really is an investment, I think, into your garden to be able to grow and keep your plants healthy. And it's also an opportunity to also share plants with folks.
I know your red yucca a lot of times can be divided out that way, and you can get pieces off of it and start new plants. And
gotcha.
And a lot of the grasses, the ornamental grasses, they get too thick in the center, and a lot of times they can be split apart and planted out separately.
And divided. So, yeah, so you're looking at a bigger area. And, you know, when you talk about, and I absolutely love the way that agaves look, very symmetrical, very, very sharp, good lines on there. But yet I think sometimes it can be almost a little harsh in the landscape. And I always like to kind of encourage folks to plant heat-loving perennials next to them and kind of mixing that up to give it a pop of color. Do you have any, you know, favorites that you like to do some planting?
Well, the desert marigold is what we call short-lived perennial, but it is a plant that gives a good impact to a garden. It has that nice, bright, cheery yellow flower with the gray-green foliage, kind of soft foliage. And the plant really suffers when it gets overwatered, so you don't want to overwater it, but you want to give it a little bit of water. But it'll pop up and has those bright yellow flowers. And if they're planted in somewhat of a mass, they're just gorgeous. But they grow, and, you know, after 2 or 3 years, they start to fade out. And then they've dropped seed, and you got new ones coming on.
Wonderful.
So they kind of replenish themselves. So they're a great one to work with. One that's somewhat common in the nursery industry is Angelita Daisy. Oh. And the Angelita Daisies are, you know, pretty maintenance-free. They just keep doing their thing, putting flowers up, dying back, putting new flowers out, and it just goes through a regular cycle, so you don't have to clip the dead, you know, deadhead it. Mm-hmm. It just kind of clears itself and keeps new ones coming on. So it's really a nice little perennial. Almost looks dainty. Uh-huh. because it's just, you know, a few inches tall, a few inches wide, and yet sends up a flower stalk that's 8 or 10 inches above it.
And some nice green, dark green foliage in the kind of the background on that. And that's great. And then I was also thinking about maybe some other ones that also, in addition to those cheery yellow ones, maybe some nice red or orange gallardias.
Right.
I think that they do really well, too, with, you know, the contrasting on the gray foliage of the agave pads as well, and kind of have that pop of color. And then I really like when I see kind of beds taken over and they kind of like start self-seeding and be able to fill in that. So, you know, I think there's a lot of selections that we have, that some perennials that can go also with not so much water too, because if they're planted in the same area, you want to make sure that you match up the water use requirements as well. You don't want something that's going to take a lot of water. Plant it next to a cacti that's going to end up rotting.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want something that doesn't require any water, cactus probably one of the closest things. They get by in very scarce amounts. But we do have some perennials that do require a little bit more water. Some of our salvias are kind of a woody, either a woody plant or a woody perennial, depending on how you look at it. But they get a lot of herbaceous foliage on them, you know, when they're growing good, have the beautiful colors on them. You know, they start getting a little leggy and stuff. You can come in and just zip the top off, you know, and they'll come out with a whole bunch of new shoots and reflower.
Wonderful. And so, and before we get too far into our show, then we want to make sure that we talk about our plant of the week. I think Angelita Daisy needs to be nominated for this week, John.
Yeah, it's a tough plant.
Yeah.
I love it. It just, last year I think it bloomed all year round.
It never slowed down.
Yeah,
with
we had the mild winter, and it just kept going.
Oh my!
So it is an excellent plant.
A great choice, small, dainty flower, but definitely tough when it comes to our desert landscaping.
Yeah, very tough.
Wonderful. Sounds good. Well, if you're looking to research some more perennials or some wildflowers that may complement your native plant garden, we encourage you to visit your site, John.
Right, and that's the Centennial Museum. So you can either just Google in Centennial Museum or Chihuahuan Desert Gardens. It should pop up pretty easily. If it doesn't, you go to museum.utep.edu, and that'll put you on it, and then you can click on the Chihuahuan Desert Gardens, you know, click, and then you can hit the plant search, the plant database, and you can go in and look at plants, you know, by the first, you know, it has alphabetized, so it'll go with the A's and B's, and you can kind of move through it that way. But it's a good site. You can see some of the plants, and there's some, not narration, but there's some worded paragraphs underneath them that talk about the plant itself.
And it's a very comprehensive database as well, so it's a great resource for you all.
And if you're looking for something, you know, maybe a little more modern, there's a couple of the wholesale nurseries that have good websites with stuff, and one of them is Savano Nursery out of Tucson. They have a pretty good website. I was thinking there's, you know, Mountain States has a real good one, Savano.
Right.
And you can go on those and look up plants and get a good descriptive brochure on them.
All of them. Wonderful. Those are excellent resources for folks that looking to be able to know a little bit more about native plants in our area. Well, we're almost out of time for the show. If you have any other questions, we'd like for you to call the Master Gardener Help Desk at 771-2354. We want to thank Evan Walsh for engineering and producing today's show. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm John White.
And remember, a gardener shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.